the 100 Years' War, the Du Guesclin period. John of Gaunt's army arrives in Bordeaux. Now, on about October the 10th, 1373, John of Gaunt's army, having left a trail of devastation in the Charolais, crossed the Loire by the bridge at Mercigny and made a course west into the Bourbonnais. This was difficult ground in the northern foothills of the Massif Central, where the rivers swollen by autumn rains flowed north-south, presenting successive barriers to the exhausted English army. The major obstacle in the way was the Allier, a very fast-flowing river with few bridges and no fords. John of Gaunt decided to try and force a crossing at Moulins, where a stone bridge, the only one in the region, crossed the river a few hundred yards from the walls of the town. He narrowly escaped being trapped there. The east bank of the river was defended by the Duke of Bourbon's garrison in the city. Bourbon himself was holding the west bank from his headquarters at Sauvigny, a few miles beyond the bridge. Other French forces were closing in from all sides. Bertrand de Guesclin brought his troops up the valley behind the English and entered Moulins. The Duke of Burgundy crossed the Loire at Rouen and marched up the southeast side. On October the 18th, his army reached Saint-Porchin. The Duke of Anjou had been conferring with his brother in Paris when the news arrived that the English were headed south. He hurriedly rejoined his army and was now approaching Moulins from the north. A large body of infantry and crossbowmen of the northern towns followed him at a day's distance. The area between the walls of Moulins and the bridge were crossed by a dense network of marshes and waterways. John of Gaunt managed to reach the bridge across this difficult terrain and got the whole army over the Allier before the French succeeded in concentrating all their forces. But it cost him the heaviest casualties of the campaign, and he was forced to abandon his wagon train on the east bank. At the beginning of November 1373, the French made their plans. Philip of Burgundy dismissed the bulk of his men-at-arms and prepared to return to his domains. The mobs of northern infantrymen were sent home. The Duke of Anjou returned to Languedoc to make plans for containing John of Gaunt in Aquitaine. The rest of the pursuit was entrusted to a small mounted force under the command of the Constable and Marshal Sancerre. The English may well have thought that the worst was over. In fact, it was just beginning. They headed southwest from Moulins, taking for the Limousin. Marching across the Cambrai and the high Limousin plateau, the men of the English army found themselves in one of the most inhospitable winter landscapes of France, cold, bleak, and sparsely populated. It was a region of dense forest with no food for men or beast. The rain fell in torrents, turning the roads and the marshes and filling the streams with undrinkable mud. Foraging was impossible. The troops were strictly forbidden to stray from the main force. Anyway, they no longer had any carts. The constable's mounted raiders clung to their flanks and picked off those who ignored these orders. Everywhere the English had passed, the French found the route marked by corpses of their starved horses. John of Gaunt was welcome nowhere until the beginning of December 1373, when he reached the valley of the Courses in Basse Limousin. The army entered the last part of the province to accept French rule. In these remote regions, it was still a fund of residual loyalty to be tapped. Gaunt was able to pause for about 3 weeks while his men rested and raiding parties spread out across the neighboring parts of the Cantrell and northern Quercy. The city of Toul put up no more than a perfunctory resistance. Brie willingly opened its gates and accepted an English garrison. Several noblemen received him in their castles, but they were solitary, and as it turned out, short-lived gains of Gaunt's campaign. Honorable to their arms, but disastrous to their interests, was the balanced verdict of the official chronicler of the French royal house. The army which entered Bordeaux at the end of December 1373 was a shadow of the one that had left Calais 5 months before. Although they had not succeeded in engaging the French on any substantial scale, they looked like beaten men. More than half of the 30,000 horses which they had set out with from Calais had been lost. Much of the army, including 300 belted knights, entered the city on foot. Others without their armor, which had been thrown away en route to lighten their loads. Their clothes were filthy and torn, and their faces were drawn with hunger. It is impossible to be precise about the scale of the human casualties. Hundreds had succumbed to injury or disease on the march or had been killed in skirmishes with the French. A large number of veterans were prisoners in the French hands. Most of them were still prisoners even 3 years later. Bordeaux was in no position to take on the burden of feeding a mass of men roughly equal to its ordinary population. The city was in the grip of a renewed epidemic of the bubonic plague, from which many of the troops would die in the following weeks. The harvest had been poor throughout southern France. Food prices rose to astronomical levels, which Gaunt's followers were quite unable to pay. They had long since spent their advances and were forbidden to raid and steal in friendly territory. In the next few weeks, famous knights, rich men with broad acres in England, were to be seen begging for food in the streets of the duchy's capital. Now, the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.